Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 25th, 2024. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Adam Ross of Twin Span Brewing shares his Mash Your Luck beer with Scott Housel and me. That's the beer that came from randomizing the characteristics of a beer in an attempt to come up with something brand new. But did it taste good? Stay tuned. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and many thanks to everybody who's helping out that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters have already seen the video that I'm planning on posting later this week to the general public. It's the episode that Steve Wilkes and I shot about his delicious sweet stout made with brown sugar and molasses. It's a beer that goes great on cold winter days, and we've had a bunch of those lately. And speaking of videos, our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave of HighGravityBrew.com are having a video contest on social media. Desiree and Dave want to know why you homebrew. They're asking you to post a video on Instagram or Facebook showing why you brew beer. Make it public. And then add the hashtag #WhyIHomebrew, all one word, and tag High Gravity Fermentations. Every post will be entered into a drawing for a $100 gift certificate to HighGravityBrew.com. The drawing will be held next week on January 31st, and it's open to anyone in the U.S. So put together a short video about why you homebrew, post it on Instagram or Facebook, make it public, use the hashtag #WhyIHomebrew, and tag High Gravity Fermentations, and you could win a $100 gift certificate to High Gravity. How fun is that? That's from our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave of HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com. So put together that video and put it out there. Make a note so that you'll remember after the show. And put that video out there and show the world why you homebrew. Maybe we can get some more people into the hobby. Okay, way back in September, Adam Ross of Twin Span Brewing and I got together on the first episode of Mash Your Luck to let the fates decide the characteristics of a beer that Adam brewed on his pilot system there at Twin Span. Now, homebrewer Scott Housel and I get to taste how those random factors came together. Adam Ross, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Happy to be here, James.
Here we're going to do the results of our Mash Your Luck game that you came up with and I named. We're actually going to taste the beer that we came up with in the first go round, and we have our next victim from Florida. We have Scott Housel.
Thanks for having me back, James. Always fun.
You've got the beer as well. Adam was generous enough to send a bunch of Twin Span beers. Twin Span Brewing, which is in Bettendorf, Iowa.
You got it.
Yeah, I'm learning.
Still there.
I don't have to ask you where you are anymore.
We haven't moved.
So Adam, refresh us on the concept of Mash Your Luck. What is it? What recess of your mind did it come from? And, you know, why are we doing this thing?
Oh, I'm going to have to dig deep because this was a while ago. I'm a little embarrassed how long it took to get to fruition, but running a business and all, and you got to have the beers that people expect and that pay the bills before you get onto the really weird and fun stuff. So what spawned it was, I believe we wanted to do a build the recipe design episode. And for whatever reason, James, you thought I would be good to brew something weird. So you suggested combining styles. And all the styles have been combined already, or so I thought. And so then I, with my, probably a little bit with my mix of computer science background, a little mix of watching too many game shows, and a mix of hating myself a little bit, decided let's randomize it. Let's split it into categories like bitterness, style, origin, those kind of things, or rather not style, ale, lager, whatever, based on kind of the way the Cicerone program defines styles, and randomize it and see what if we come up with something new. And you brought in the framing of the mash your luck and end it.
And you weren't sure what mash or press your luck was, the game show, but Scott, you're as old as I am probably, so you knew you were familiar.
Oh yeah, great show.
I love that show. Big bucks, no whammies. So what's the concept? How does mash your luck work?
Yeah, it's what do we have, five categories that we a random
Yes.
number generate through, and then we kind of came up the rules as we went, as we played it the first time, and it was you get a pass on one, or you get a redo on one, and then you're kind of locked into whatever you land on, for better or worse. So I'm real excited to see what Scott gets on his roll, since I'm not going to be on the line for actually brewing the thing.
And Haven Schultz from the Brew Club came on a few weeks ago and picked the categories for that organization. And I haven't heard, how that's going yet, but I'll be looking forward to seeing what the members of the Brew Club, how they respond to the whole thing.
Yeah, that's so cool that I guess people listened to that and thought, hey, instead of like that, let's laugh at what this brewer has to go through. They were like, hey, let's subjugate our whole club to it. So that's really cool. I'm honored a little bit that people are doing that. And I want to apologize to everyone who was involved with that, because it can be hard if you don't get the values you want.
Well, I can't remember the result. I can't remember the, how they did. I think they did pretty good. And I think that it's going to be up to their creativity, to expand on, what they came up with. Like I say, I don't remember what the parameters were, but I think it was potentially pretty easy for them to come up with that beer. But, whether they added adjuncts or whether they added, spices or fruits or whatever, on top of that, I think is a challenge to their creativity. And so the categories are ABV, bitterness, color, type, and origin. And we use a random number generator to pick each of from those categories. Like ABV has 1 to 5, very low, low, medium, high, and very high. Bitterness also has five options. Color has five. At that time when we did it, the type only had two, lager and ale. We for the brew crew, we put in sour as well. And then origin had US, Germany, UK, and then we added Belgium as well. So do you remember, Adam, what your choices were, what your characteristics were of your mash or luck beer?
Yeah, it was British origin. It was a lager yeast. It was some high alcohol, not very high, and very high bitterness. I think that's everything,
And
right? I
color.
mean,
What was the
the
color?
color light, which I'll withhold my comment on that.
Pale. So what describe the beer? And we've all got it in front of us here, but describe the beer that we're sipping right now.
Yeah, so as British lagers go, far as I know, they don't exist. I'm sure there are some, but like there's no that I could find British native lager yeast or really native styles. Historically, there were some, but so I had to go German for the yeast profile, but everything else went British, to the point where I use reverse osmosis water at the brewery, so I built Burtonized water here. I use Beersmith to do all the calculations, and Beersmith has like a historic Burton and a modern Burton, or at least my Beersmith does. The historic one is incredibly salty. Like there's so many mineral additions. It's like mineral water. And then the modern is still has the ratios the same, but it's a lot more palatable. So that was water. That was yeast. For the fermentables, I kind of was shooting for a smash, but I didn't think a smash would get us to the crispness I wanted in a lager. So I actually ended up doing 90% of the fermentables was Maris Otter, and then 10% was Lyle's golden syrup.
Oh.
And then so when I wanted to hit the which Lyle's golden syrup is British as well. I ordered it off of Amazon. The bitterness was very high, so I wanted to go, and I don't recall if bitterness very high is subjective. It's there aren't hard numbers for it because something low alcohol, 50 IBUs could be very high,
Right.
and something high alcohol that could be quite low. So what I wanted to do was a bitterness to gravity ratio of 1 to 1, and the recipe, when I was designing the recipe, the gravity before I added the syrup was 1068. So I figured, let's do 68 IBUs of bitterness calculated. And then I added 20 more IV or 20 more gravity points from the syrup. I figured the syrup would ferment out entirely, and I would be left with ultimately 1 to 1 bitterness to gravity ratio. It didn't work out that way. The sugar did not entirely ferment out, and I actually finished quite high. So, starting gravity was 1088, finishing was 1019,
Oh
which
my.
is, yeah, that's at least 10 points higher than what I was shooting for.
Yeah, it's not a super dry beer.
No, but we still landed at, and I don't know why we wrote on the cans I sent you guys 8.9. It's 8.95, so I think we would round that up to 9.0, which gets us right at the bottom of the high alcohol category on Cicerone categorization. So at this point, I'm thinking it's almost like a really big bitter. That syrup addition is not tearing things out as much as I wanted, but that's what I was shooting for. When it and then I fermented it with the German 3470 yeast, the lager yeast, which will ferment just about anything, and it's what I tend to use in my lagers. I fermented it at a cool 55 degrees Fahrenheit
Ooh.
under pressure.
Oh. And I just played the sound effect.
Right. I had to pause for that there. I knew it was gone. So under pressure, ferment at 1 atmosphere, 15 PSI. I did ramp up the temperature a little bit towards the end of the ferment, but we actually had, or rather, that was the plan. We had a power outage right around the towards the end of that, and I didn't get that little temperature boost. So it more or less fermented at 55 for its whole life. There was some deviation in there, but that was mostly it.
Well, I'm not getting any butter or butterscotch, no diacetyl on my palate. Scott, do you get any defects as far as that's concerned?
No, I think the bitterness is really nice, and the maltiness, it's very tasty.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
it, and we haven't you haven't I came up with a name, so I've got to
Yes.
I've been standing here like a little boy waiting for my waiting for my moment. I came up with the name. What was the name?
It was the Anglo Imperial Lager, or the AIL, which is incredibly corny, but also pretty clever, because it's a lager, that's an ale.
It's a lager that's an
And
ale. It's an ale that's a lager.
I can count on one fingerless hand, James, how many customers have laughed at that name.
Even when you explained it to them?
Yes. They're just like, ah, yeah, okay. That's the response I get. But I love it because it's the right level of nerdiness that just, that it works. That's me. It fits for the sphere.
Help
Hey.
it. I love it. I can't help it. I'm just too pr I'm too proud of myself.
I don't have the data to tell you if the name helped or hurt the sales of this beer, but Before I before I talk sales, though.
You didn't focus group this beer?
No, I did not.
How much did you make?
So I made about a barrel and a half,
that's...
which it's like 45 gallons or something like that. My little fermenters, my pilot system, hold about that. And it's an odd number to brew that, but it's largely because when I do my math, it's more about making sure I use a full bag of grain rather than leaving a half open bag. And then what size can I get syrup in? And, you know, so that kind of dictates the volume I brew more than anything.
That's smart.
I finished it with, before I fermented, and I think this goes into the character you might be getting. Whenever I brew a lager, I add acid addition before I pitch the yeast. So in this case, it was phosphoric acid. Sometimes it's lactic. To get it down to 5.0 pH. I just like that extra crispness. Might have been a mistake to do that with Burton water. I did it there. Finished fermenting. It tasted weird. It tasted not like something I wanted to really sell right away. So I added, and I figured this was British enough, I added East Kent Goldings at the dry hop at a rate of about half an ounce per 5 gallons. So I was kind of going for the like cask ale trick of just adding, you know, a handful of hops. The other hops I didn't mention, the bitterness hops were all Fugl. And I went with Fugl because that's what I had on hand. And then I realized later that I actually did have EKG on hand as well. Otherwise, this would have been a 100% EKG beer. Not that I have anything against Fugl. It's just Fugl I like in dark British beers because it brings this kind of like funk, not like a sour funk. It's just kind of, you know, like a musty old tavern rather than, you know, something bright and citrusy. That's kind of how it plays on my palate. But yeah, Fuggles for bitterness and a significant bitterness addition because it's like 4 alpha acids or something really low. And then that little EKG sprinkling on the end. And then I lagered it for quite a while until my rule with lagering is once it's clear on the sample glass, it's ready to package and serve. I don't use gelatin. I don't have filtration of any kind. So it's really when the yeast wants to get out of there is when I say the beer is ready. So I think the beer right now is probably 2 months old, something like that.
It's good. It's deceptively drinkable. It is a big beer. I mean, you can tell it's a big beer. I mean, it's not. It's coating the back of my throat. it's not syrupy sweet, but it is big. I mean, you can tell that it finished big, but there is a substantial amount of bitterness there to counteract that to make it, you know, drinkable.
I wish I would have gone a little more bitter because I didn't know that the syrup wouldn't ferment out entirely, but I was really hoping for the bitterness to rise up to that level of, you know, sweetness and viscosity. And it just didn't quite get there, 90% of the way there, I think, but just not quite where I wanted.
Yeah, I think for a first attempt at something weird and out of the ballpark, you know, kind of thing, I think you did really well. I think it's I like it. I mean, I can't help
awesome.
It.
I will say about a month ago, and you had asked on the last time I was on the show, like, how are people reacting to it? What do you think? And I was a little cagey. I was a little like, it's weird. it turned a corner, like, overnight to where my brewer's assistant, who's also bartender and sales guy, Austin, I walked on the brewery one day, and he's like, Adam, you got to try the ale. It's different. And it was good before, but I don't know. I had been thinking I shouldn't have added that acid addition because it almost had this like lemony tart character that was out of place and it just needed more time lagering, I guess. And I think it tastes like an English malt liquor or maybe, and this doesn't exist, but if I were to call this a style, maybe this is a British cold IPA. You know, it's
God.
Heavy, it's bitter, but it's also.
That's what the world needs is another IPA.
Adjuncts. course.
Well, it reminds me of my wife got me, I believe it's an Obolon Extra is what it's called. It's a Ukrainian beer and it's a
Oh.
12% lager.
Oh, shoot.
And it's actually, I just drank it the other day. It actually reminds me of that a lot. And it's got that nice, like not syrupy character, but pushing it.
Interesting. I kind of want to try that beer now, Scott. It's yeah, you don't see too many lagers that get up above 10, 11. I mean, you got like the Doppelbocks and stuff, but like beyond Sammy Claus, you just don't see
Right.
too many lagers that big. So I think they're and why not? Lager yeast can do it. It's up to the task, especially if you pitch enough of it.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's not stressed at all. I don't taste any
It
yeasty
was
off.
a really big yeast pitch though. Like that was another case of working with what I had on hand. I had a 500 gram brick of this yeast, which is like four times what you probably should use. So it was, I didn't do a starter in this case. It was just let's throw in the whole brick and it'll be happy. And it was, it fermented very quick.
If there's one ding that I would have about it, I wish it were a teeny bit more carbonated, and maybe it's just the sample, maybe it's just the can that I got, but if it were just a teeny bit more carbonated, it would have a more, a scrubbing effect that might, counteract any, little residual sweetness that, detracts away from the whole beer. That's my only negative comment. And that's so I like it.
Yeah, no, that's a valid one. I agree with that too. And part of that could be the canning process, since this is a to-go crawler can that we canned a while ago. Since I it took me a while to get my butt in gear and get the beers out to you guys, but also on our pilot system, and this just changed, but we just swapped out our tanks that we use in our pilot brews, and we can actually carbonate to a lot higher level now. So if I were to do this again, and I'm not saying I would, but it absolutely, that would be one of the things I would change is increase the carbonation on it.
Yeah, I could see brewing this going into autumn, into fall.
Yeah. No, I'm digging the beer, and the people who like it, I've had a couple of people come in and talk to me and tell me they came in because they heard that episode and they wanted to try this beer, including some professional brewers. So I've gotten some really good feedback on this. That being said, Basic Brewing Radio fans and pro brewers are not the majority of my customers. And so when setting up for this episode today, I said no, thank you. I don't want to mash my luck again for a little while until at least this beer sells out. And it's a really, I'm trying to be politically correct about it. I love this beer. The people who know what's up love this beer, but the bulk of the crowd out there, either they don't know the style or they maybe don't want to drink a 9% alcohol beer with their dinner. It's sitting there, and it's fine. I get a taste it every time I'm up there. It's on there longer than a normal beer. That just means I get to taste it more.
And maybe it'll get extra special awesome as it ages even more on the surface.
I do think it'll sell out well before autumn. So, Scott, we won't be able to test that out. But
Our
I
Imperial
hope it does. I hope it
Oktoberfest.
sells out for you.
Oh, it's getting there. It's been picking up steam. Like it sat there for a little while, and then I watched the data on our beers and how they sell all the time. And it was funny seeing maybe people are catching up on back episodes of Basic Brewing, and they're hearing about it and they're coming in, or maybe they heard from their friends. But it's got a little curved growth going on.
There you go. And if you have a curved growth, get it checked. Be responsible.
Maybe you're drinking too much beer. I don't know.
Well, the weather finally gave me a break yesterday, and I was able to brew the beer that you'll hear. Matt Giovannisi of Brew Cabin, Josh Secor of Gambit Brewing, and I formulate next week. It's an extract beer with a short boil, and I pitched the featured yeast from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Yeast. It's L25 Hygge, a hop-friendly lager yeast. That's a good thing because there's a fair amount of hops in this beer. Hygge is famously used in Pilsner-style beers, but Eben from Imperial says it's much more versatile than just using it for Pilsners. In fact, I'm fermenting it at ale temperature with this hoppy beer, so I didn't use a starter. In fact, with those 200 billion cells in each easy-to-open package, say it with me, my stir plate is usually dusty because I don't use it anymore to make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon ale batches. Now, I have to confess that this beer was almost a higher gravity beer because I miscalculated a bit, but I saved it. I topped it up with some spring water in the fermenter to bring it back down to moderate gravity. Anyway, Hygge is very happy this morning in that beer, and I can't wait to taste the final result. Ask your local homebrew store about L25 Hygge from Imperial and check out all the dependable deliciousness at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. Well, Scott, are you ready for your round?
Sure.
I
let's do it.
And you have, speaking of curves, you have a potential curve that you may or may not want to do, depending on what you come up with the base round here. But we'll hold that. But on the first category is, and I'm setting my random number generator here, is ABV. We have 1 very low, 2 low, 3 medium, 4 high, and 5 very high. So do you trust me, Scott, as if you have a choice, in being random in picking out your numbers?
Absolutely. Adam was all in, and he's got to brew 40 gallons of it.
Oh, and you also have to brew 40 gallons of it. So,
okay, so for fall, I'll be ready for you.
No, and you can brew, that's one wild card that we don't talk about. You can brew any batch size that you want to. If you want to brew like 1 gallon of this weird beer, whatever we come up with, or maybe it could be the most delicious beer. Who knows? The batch size is completely up to you.
I've had a lot of Scott Spears at this point now. He was generous enough to send quite a few. And I had the Disaster Show beers, or well, most of them so far. Scott can handle whatever's thrown his way, and he better brew more than a gallon. I'm hoping I get to try whatever he comes up with today.
All right. Scott, are you ready?
And I'm ready to mash my luck.
Mash your luck. Number 1. Oh, very low ABV. And there is a wild card at the end of this. You know, you can choose to spin any of these categories again. So right now, as it is now, and somehow I need to take notes. Somebody take notes. Scott, you take notes.
I'm taking notes right now.
I haven't eaten much today. I've had half of this 9% beer. So very low ABV.
Which is what range again? I don't have my cards on me.
Well, it's subjective. How about that? Very low.
Okay.
ABV. Or you find your cards, or if
it's
you want.
Zero to three is very low, which is very low.
Yeah. Well, it's not.
All right. So three.
Yeah.
three to four.
Okay. All right. The second category is bitterness. We have low, low to mid, balanced, high, and very high. So, Scott, are you ready?
Big money, no whammies.
Here we go. Three, balanced. Oh, I think you lucked out on that one. So, very low ABV, balanced bitterness. How do you feel so far?
Sounds good so far.
Now, color.
I usually like to brew in like the 6 to 8% range, but I'll go for for very low.
Well, you know, maybe we'll see if you want to re-roll that category. Color seems to be the easiest of the categories, because you can adjust the color, you know, pretty easily. As opposed to all the other categories, it seems to
me. And I didn't hit the color target on my beer. I don't think I mentioned that. For whatever reason, the syrup maybe pushed us beyond.
Yeah, it's kind of
into copper amber.
But we're not. You know, it's not a competition. I'm not gonna ding you.
You can take away all my points.
You don't win the car this time.
I get the take home board game version though, right?
That's right. You get some consolation prizes. All right. Here comes color. We got pale, gold, amber, brown, and black. And here we go.
Big money, no whammies, pale.
You got it, pale. You called it.
Wow.
So we got,
I'll take it.
Very low ABV, balanced, pale beer. Now, do you want to do all three categories? There's lager, ale, and sour. You are a very good sour brewer. So do you want to do all three of those categories, or do you want to add another one?
I think those three sound good.
Okay, let me check. I got to change my little thingy here. All right. For the type, lager, ale, or sour, and here we go. Ale.
That's great for me.
That's a safe one. Okay, and for origin, we have U.S., Germany, U.K., and Belgium. And do you want to add any other origin categories?
I like that. That sounds good.
Okay, so here we go. For origin, U.S., Germany, U.K., and Belgium. U.K. again. Ah.
Okay.
Okay for the UK. All right, so we have a very low ABV, balanced bitterness, pale ale from the UK. That seems fairly doable.
I think that style exists.
Yeah. So now's the wild card time, Scott. Do you want to... Or do you want to introduce your new category?
I would like to re-roll the origin.
Oh.
But if I'm adding my new category, you get to choose if I get a re-roll.
Oh. What do you think?
Wasn't there like a goblin or something on the show? Like some kind of a mascot?
Oh, that's the whammy. The whammy comes and takes away all your stuff.
Can he factor that in, or can we factor him in, or can I be the whammy?
What are we doing with that? Oh.
I like Scott too much to be that mean. I'm just floating it out there.
But you might have to help me a little bit on formulation, but
the question is, Adam, if Scott adds this new category, in addition to ABV, bitterness, color, type, and origin, if he adds this new category and then does a spin, do we want to let him do the wild card before or after that new category?
I think after, because I really like the idea of the category, and it's something I feel like maybe was discussed, but I kind of left it out because I didn't want to include it, but I like it. It's a good idea.
Okay. So talk about your new category, Scott.
Well, I called it whammy or bonus. and then the odd numbers will all be ingredients. And if you get an even number, then it's nothing.
Oh.
So okay. You've got honey and sugar is number one. You've got flowers and herbs for number three. You got ginger, hot pepper, spice for number five. Number seven is tea or coffee. Number nine is chocolate, cacao nibs, vanilla. And number 11 is fruit, berries, or vegetables.
Oh, my goodness. So we've got 11 numbers, right?
Well, you got 12 choices because 12 is also just negates the category.
Okay. All right. I got it set up. Now, I don't remember. I can't remember what you just said, so you're going
to... I'm going to get to make up what I want.
Yeah, that's right. We'll just play. In the playback, I'll say, hey, wait a minute. Okay, so what do we call it? Do we call this adjunct, the adjuncts category?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. All right, here we go.
Weird extra stuff.
Weird extra stuff.
How about bonus?
WES, the West category. All right, here we go. We got number two, which is a...
Number two is nothing.
Is a null. Okay. So now you've got a very low ABV balanced pale ale from the UK.
Got it bitter, buddy.
Do you want to re-roll as your joker? Do you want to re-roll any of those categories?
I would like to re-roll the origin, yeah.
The origin, okay. All right. And that's four. Okay, four. Four choices, and here we go. Number one, the U.S.
Okay.
You're back here. Are you happier or not?
Slightly happier. I haven't brewed a whole lot of British beers, but I was up for the challenge. But I haven't brewed a lot of low ABV beers, so.
Yeah. So now, okay, so we're locked in to a very low ABV, balanced, pale ale from the U.S. Mm.
Okay.
I like that. There aren't too many U.S. beer styles that have gone very low that are ales. It almost, if I were to be the person in the hot seat here, I'd be tempted to look at some historic recipes of when, you know, potentially low ABV doesn't mean low sugar content. You know, it means maybe didn't ferment or convert entirely, and you get into some really interesting esoteric styles that people aren't selling these days.
Now, there are some techniques that we've talked about on this show of how you can brew satisfying, you know, low gravity beers. My favorite thing is to throw in some malted rye and then mash at standard saccharification temperatures so that you're not, you know, converting those sticky, is it glucans, Adam? You're the professional. The beta glucans, the sticky things of rye.
Sure, I don't know how sticky they are. I don't go around touching them too often.
Well, they're cough syrupy, those things. But also, you may want to go back and listen to the episode, the recipe development episode that we did with Chris Colby's Texas Table Beer. You know, that was a very low gravity, low alcohol beer that was really, you know, fun and tasty. So, you know, that's the challenging part, the very low ABV. It seems to me that, you know, an American beer, you know, with American, say, maybe hop profile that is low ABV without being, you know, too sharp, essentially.
So, James, there was, and I mentioned it on, it was one of the first episodes I was, you interviewed me on. There was this historic style of a Weiss beer, but not like you're thinking of with a German beer. A lot of American brewers in the 19th century were basically doing like a Berliner Weiss without trying to sour it. It might have soured because of not great practices, but you'd get these super effervescent, low alcohol beers that were very representative of the place because they would take the local grain and just ferment it, and they would package it before fermentation was even completed. You'd get just these, you'd get, you know, corked bottles because otherwise they might blow up on you. That Scott, I'll let you think what you want to make on this, but I'm excited for what you got, if you can't tell. I'm kind of wishing I would have got these now.
Well, you could,
and it wouldn't sell for me. It wouldn't sell for me, but maybe.
I was going to say you could do it too. And then it would be
That's
a competition.
True.
But we don't want, you know, this is for fun. but you know, you could do a small batch. as your own house. Or I could do it too. Maybe we all three do. No, I'm already brewing so much stuff for this recipe, the recipe development shows, and
I wouldn't be able to ship what I want to make to you because it would blow up in transit, and I don't think UPS would be too happy with that.
No,
a not finished fermenting beer that you bottle and ship across the country.
So, how do you feel, Scott? Are you confident?
I feel good. Am I allowed to seek Adam's advice?
Oh, sure. You can seek anybody's advice.
I'm the whammy, right? So I can provide him bad advice that leads him astray.
Yeah, he's gonna cut your leg out from under you.
You're going to want to start at about 1080 and end at about 1070.
That's a low ABV beer.
That'd be very sticky beer.
VSB.
Enough with the acronyms, but maybe.
I'll come up with a name. Oh, well, I'm excited. I think it is a challenging beer. Whereas, you know, if you had stuck with the UK, I think it would be, you know, easier to do. But you know, you could invent a new U.S. style. Who knows?
Well, that's kind of what I'm hoping for. Adam got, you know, a little wrench thrown in his, so I kind of got the opposite.
Now the kind of sticking or the thing about your final category that you chose to put in is that, you know, had we not done that final category, you could have had free rein to put whatever to add whatever you wanted into the style. So, you know, maybe we can make that an optional category for future participants. You know, you see what I'm saying? So it kind of, since you got a nil, since you got, you know, a two, a nothing on that final adjunct category, now you are locked in. You can't add all those fun things in.
Yeah, I mean, low alcohol, though, I feel like a lot of those ingredients wouldn't it would push you away from beer. Like if you added fruit or chocolate to something under 3% alcohol, you've got like
seltzer.
You've got fermented. You've got the apple juice you forgot about in the back of the fridge and it fermented a little bit, or you've got Yoo-hoo. So
chocolate water,
right? So maybe it's for the best that didn't get picked.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we've got a bonus beer. Shall we do the bonus beer? We've got a fun beer from Adam. Tell us about do we all have the fun beer, or Adam, you don't have to because since you made it, but
I don't have it in front of me, but I've it's imprinted tattooed on my brain.
So Scott, do you have the beer?
This is the Sati.
The Sati.
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect. So I had a business trip recently, and I read the book about Sati brewing. And James, you remembered his name. He was on the show before.
Mika Leitinen, and the name of the book is Viking Age Brew.
Excellent book. One of the few that I've like just read front to back in a short amount of time because it was really engaging. And I've been wanting to do a Sati for a while. I've been wanting to use Sugar Creek malt for a while. And I feel like, and one thing in his book is he's like, I want more people to brew Sati, but if you're not gonna actually try to make Sati, maybe call it something else. And I thought a while, and I thought, you know, this is deserving of the title Sati. So it is Sugar Creek has a malt Stjordal, if I'm pronouncing that correct. It's like a alderwood smoked malt that they floor malt, I believe. And then it's also a bag of Munich malt because that's what I had on hand and I wanted to do 50-50 with that. I lined my mash tun with a pine tree branch from my backyard, a fir branch from my father's yard, and I ordered online through like Etsy a juniper branch, I think from Finland.
Oh.
And then a bunch of juniper berries. And so I didn't carve like a big wooden trunk to run the wort through or anything. In the book, he says
Slacker.
that
Slacker.
stainless. He says stainless is okay if you embody the, you know, the spirit of it. And so, I mashed high temperature and let it sit in there for a long time, and then ran it through into my kettle. A lot of cases, sati doesn't get boiled, but I just for shelf stability reasons, I brought it right up to a boil, so I'm confident, you know, that it's shelf stable. And then I added just the scantest amount of hops. Legally, if I'm a beer brewery, I need to include some hops, whether that's one pellet or you know 5 pounds. It's up to me. But I added very few hops, and then I fermented it warm with Voss Kvike. I even did. We were open for service at the time, so I didn't do a full Kvike scream. You're supposed to scream at the wort when you throw in the yeast. So I was kind of just like ah, and I threw it in. Right. So it fermented very quickly. While I fermented it, incidentally, the first snowfall of the season, which was I thought it was the universe's way of saying, you know what, Adam, you should be brewing a sati today. Because it smells like a Christmas bonfire when you're brewing it. It just smelled incredible. All the staff coming in to work and leaving, they walk by the brew house and everyone would just smelled so good. And now that we have it on tap, and we might still have it on tap by the time this airs, it'll probably be gone. It's been people either absolutely adore it and love it, or they're weirded out by it and they shove it over to their spouse to try. But it's I'll let you guys decide what you think of it.
Well, I haven't tasted it yet because I'm just sitting here smelling it, and it is super, super smoky smell. It even gets through my nose, which is an accomplishment. But man, it smells
Oh yeah, the
great.
smoke right away.
That's
Oh
only 50% of the grist. I don't know what would have happened if that was the only malt in there.
yeah, the smoked malt that I got from Sugar Creek was not this smoky, I don't think. I don't think. I think it was it an alder smoke or was it a beech wood? I don't remember. I'll have to go
This
back.
one is alder smoke, and alder smoke's used a lot in like smoking meats. So one of the
Yeah.
feedbacks I've gotten from people is that people who like smoked meats tend to really like this beer.
Yeah, specifically salmon, and the Alaska Brewing Company, their famous, smoked porter is was smoked on alder wood. And back in the day, when we first started going to the Great American Beer Festival, they would essentially smoke their malt in this salmon smokehouse in the off season. But I think they eventually bought it. So it smells great. I'm gonna go in for a taste. And a cough. It's making me cough.
Secondhand smoke effects already.
That's not what I expected. It's very woody.
Yeah, the branches actually, you can taste them.
I like it. I'm assuming my brain is still wrapping itself around it. This is not like any other smoked beer I've ever had. I brewed a pseudo sati that you can, if you search for basic brewing and sati on YouTube, you can see that. I brewed that in 2019. Mine was less drinkable. It was, I think it was tasty, but it was very sort of sweet and big and heavy. This is a lot less so.
We're
Mine was,
using Kvike yeast
yeah,
then.
mine was 10.5%. It was using Kviking, but I didn't boil. I mashed for I think 2 hours at like 148, and then did a mash out at 176 to sanitize, to pasteurize everything.
See, I came in at like 165 and let it drop down. And it was, I believe, and I may be mistaken, I believe there was a part in the book where he talks about one of the farmhouse brewers, their process. And I was also, I love that because I was also brewing 15 barrels of something on my other system at the same time. So I was like, I'm just going to let this hang out over here while I go do other stuff.
There's a spice to it that's probably coming from the evergreen, but it doesn't taste like evergreen to me. It tastes more like almost like cinnamon or nutmeg to me. What do you think, Scott? Throw some adjectives.
I'm
It's
there's a
wet.
kind of like dark, like a kind of dark fruitiness almost, but I can't say that it really is. But it's a nice mild smokiness. The smell's very smoky.
I wonder if the fruitiness isn't the Voss. Voss brings like I think a candied orange when it ferments at high temperatures.
It's nice. It gives it just a little bit of sweetness to go with the smokiness.
It's an aggressively flavored beer.
Yes.
I can see where it's either a one or a zero as far as your customers maybe. The most the more adventurous ones that have tasted a whole bunch of beers would go, oh yeah, and sit back and like really have fun with this. But if you're a cream ale drinker or something, you
I
probably.
think it helps that our staff, and I didn't ask them to do this, we have our tap list on chalkboards, and they wrote on the board Sati parentheses smoky uppercase exclamation mark in parentheses. And I haven't heard, I don't think anyone sent the beer back. I think it's been they've been properly warned that this is going to be something different, and it's just been fun that just last night, someone was in from out of town, and they were carrying multiple cans of Sati to go because they were just hit that nerve for them.
It's good. I think it's a success.
Oh yeah. Once you get past the initial smoke, you can really enjoy it as, not as smoky as the first sip that really hits you.
Yeah, the nose is extremely smoky.
Was it with the Rauch beer, the first beer, you need to drink at least two if you ever have a Rauch beer. And this was some interview I heard of a German brewer. The first one just gets you acclimated. The second one is where you really enjoy the beer, and that's kind of true here too. I've had a crowler of Sati by myself, and the second half is a different experience than the first half.
There's more, maybe dark fruits coming out now that my taste buds and my nose is, they've gotten used to the smoke. And now there's sort of deeper, richer things coming through, that I didn't get initially. Just because you're just hit with that wave of smoke. Chris Colby would love this beer. He loves really, really smoky beers. And so he would go crazy over this, I think.
Awesome. He needs to stop up. He went to school here in town.
Oh.
He should visit his alma mater and order a sati.
I will let him know.
I'll let any homebrewer know if they want to try Stjørdal, and I hope this doesn't hurt Sugar Creek sales. It is such an intense malty beer that the next two or three beers I brewed in this equipment afterwards, I swore when I'm brewing it, I'm like, oh no, I smell smoke. And like the next one after this was IPA, and I'm like, I do not want a smoky IPA. But when the beer was finished, there's no smoke. And I had people who didn't know, that the sati had been involved try it, and they're like, yeah, no, this is normal. And just in my mind, it was just so that smell was so prevalent on brew day and afterwards.
It's in your rubber gaskets.
Hope not.
All right, guys. This has been fun. And I look forward, Scott, I look forward to tasting and hearing what you come up with. And if you want to throw any ideas or questions or whatever toward me and Adam, do so. And I can't say that I would be very useful, but, you know, Adam's pretty smart, so.
Yeah, as long as you promise to send me some, I'll give you all the advice you want.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Adam and Scott. That was a lot of fun. Scott sent his recipe that he came up with to Adam and me, and I think it's going to be a fun one. But, you know, I think whatever Scott brews is going to be good, if past examples are an indication of future performance. he sounds like a stockbroker. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. So until next time, till then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voice, and we'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.